Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mean.
Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean. We are speaking today about how to best serve as light promoters. This is our eighth show in a series discussing the laws of existence, the deeper mysteries, and the wondrous world around us behind the appearances. Lightbearers for humanity have certain guidelines that must be adhered to in order to promote growth in others, which they are very much dedicated to, rather than dependency. Well-intended but misplaced assistance can stifle growth and prolong another being on the treadmill of illusion. Walking the line of impeccability as a way shower requires awareness of how best to serve. So, folks, we are very delighted that you've joined us again today, and we're going to take a look at where that fine line is of enabling versus assisting, and many, many more aspects of how to best serve as the major way-showers of our time and our planet. We have with us today Paul St. John, and he has compiled a list of your questions to us, which we always enjoy immensely getting through our emails, to assist us with these particular topics that we were hoping to get covered today. Paul, welcome again. We're always so glad to have you, and please just let us know what you would like us to talk about.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with a question that I think many people, particularly lightworkers, have pondered on many occasions, and that's about how lightworkers can assist those that they pass who seem in need of assistance. For example, those who are in their environment and who are ill, those on the street we pass who are homeless, those trapped in emotional dramas. I usually personally try to hold that space of trust that all is perfect and that they are perfect. But I often wonder if I'm just glossing over my discomfort with a New Age perspective.
Well, you know, there are times you just know you have to be somewhere, but let's try and formulate some criteria that we can use as guidelines.
That would be great.
So, firstly, we give at the level someone is able to receive. Secondly, we give at the level at which there is need. In other words, giving someone a dollar who has just gone into bankruptcy is not responsive to their need. And if we take a look at giving at the level someone is able to receive, light workers usually get very excited about the wonderful information that they've just accessed. They just want to tell everyone about it. Some can receive it, some cannot. Yesterday, they weren't ready to receive it, because if they were, they would have gotten it yesterday versus today. And I think it's Emerson that said that if there's a word that you need to hear at a specific moment, it will make its way to your ear. So if we only learned it today, yesterday we weren't ready for it. But yet when we learn it and then we want to give others immediately all the insights when they are not ready, that's an example of giving at a level someone is unable to receive. So we've got, firstly, we give at the level someone is able to receive. Secondly, we give at the level that there is need. And thirdly, living in full awareness in the moment will make it easier to hear one's heart's response. Our hearts will guide us when it is time to stop and lend a helping hand. There are always those who are willing to manipulate by being helpless. In fact, it's one of the biggest forms of tyranny. There are also always those who, not feeling lovable and desiring to be needed, are willing to jump into their trap and save them. It's for this reason that the heart will guide us in stillness and in clarity. And unfortunately, a lot of people who become healers or counselors or spiritual counselors are in the category of not having the self-love and therefore enjoying the feeling of being needed and fixing someone else's life. So it is also what will guide us, this clarity and stillness, as to what level of assistance they are open to receiving. They may not need advice, but just a listening ear. The perception we may want them to get may be far beyond their present capability. True listening, to determine how to help, comes from seeing through their eyes in total silence of the mind. In this way, the true spirit of assistance, which is empowerment, can come forth. It's actually amazing how little true listening actually happens. Because all you are in silence of the mind, I am in silence of the mind, but normally when I work with people on interviews, they will, in fact, not hear what I'm saying because they're already formulating their next question in their head and how they can make a lively response to what I'm saying, so they don't understand what I'm saying. And we're at odd purposes as it goes through. With you, when I'm speaking, you're totally silent because you're listening with your heart. This is true listening, but, you know, if people were very clever, they would teach their negotiators, their ambassadors, their deal makers, how to listen in total silence while looking through another's eyes. They will be surprised what they've been missing.
I definitely agree. Yes, that's a huge thing. I think it should be, true listening skills should be taught in school, in fact.
Oh, so much of true beingness should be taught in school. What about the sub-personality?
Oh, of course. Yes, I think that's a whole interview there.
Yes.
Well, my next question, is about the downtime that I feel many people seem to require after healing, particularly this. The question of the show today is about light workers and truth seekers and how they can basically their journey and how to live their lives. I find that often in proportion to the level of profundity of the healing or the class or whatever that one is engaged in, there's often this feeling of a need for downtime afterwards. For example, I remember my first class with you. I underwent such a dramatic leap in consciousness that I felt like doing nothing else but watching TV for most of the month afterwards.
Okay.
Despite knowing it wasn't the best way to spend my time, there was just nothing else I wanted to do. So I was wondering why this might be and how we can move through these times if it's best to... if it's in our best interest to just follow through with these desires, or if these desires are, or if engaging them are actually a sign of an over-nurtured inner child.
Well, let's divide your questions into three. The more conscious one becomes, the more one becomes aligned with the rhythms of the cosmos. Recently, a new ray of light was born, and the ray of rhythm. Doingness and beingness. It's the most essential pulsation of rhythms in all of existence. It becomes less pronounced when one learns to work in a state of pure meditation and in eternal time. In other words, you can cultivate mindless working, automatic functioning, while staying expanded. When you do that, you won't need to watch television to stay in the mindless state. But so secondly, in my classes, information is imparted on so many levels that the chakras take in the information, but it takes days or even weeks to download it through the endocrine system into the bloodstream. The bloodstream, encoded with spirals of light, which Mother has upgraded, in fact, in recent months, carry this information to the heart. The heart interprets it in the form of feelings. There's actually a specific cluster of cells in the heart, known as the heart brain, that actually do this. In other words, the heart thinks, but non-cognitively. And then those non-cognitive thoughts are transported again with spirals of light in the language, it's like the interface, to the pineal gland, which is our interpretation device. Depending on the overload, downtime is required after the intensity of one of those week-long classes, which are just simply life-altering. They're not an ordinary class. You know, class is a misnomer. It's just not the right word. But let's look at the third one, and then we'll take our commercial break. A lot of the advanced masters who come to my classes, who are chosen from the major way showers on Earth today, have had an obsession with television lately. First, there was a great insight that needed to be had. We were created as a reflection of the potential of the infinite being, as we discussed last week, and this was to change. But, as usual, it was in the flesh that we had to get the insights. This changed to an expression of the infinite's potential, a much higher order of beingness. The obsessiveness, like TV watching, was meant to give us clues that there was more than just a television show that was going on. Many addictions promise enhanced clarity, but they don't deliver it. We're fooled. And also many addictions are very subtle. The addiction to know, you know, which leads us to jumping to conclusions. So basically, your TV watching could also have been mirroring to you that there are addictions in your life that the universe is supporting you to break as habits. It could have been a mirrored situation. We'll be right back.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Elmine experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Elmi's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almin. To learn more about Almin and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back, and we are delighted to have you with us today, and also Paul St. John, the Newport, Oregon manager of Spiritual Journeys, which is the you can go to our website on www.spiritualjourneys.com. Paul, welcome back. And I just answered something, but I cut the question short a little bit. Did you properly understand my answer?
Well, the first two parts of your answer about the downtime that like workers seem to require sometimes was very clear. The third part was a little bit unclear, and you were talking about how watching TV could have, as an example, could have been. I think this was more of it addressed particularly the issue I brought up about television and how it was a symbol in our environment to show us that we were becoming more than just a television screen to mother. So if there's anything else you wanted to say about that, that would be great.
Okay, well, let's explain it a little clearer, a little slower, and a little better. I was a bit rushed for time, and I can understand that there's portions that are not so clear to you. So, major light workers often mirror concepts that we need to get because all new information is gotten at the physical level. So Mother relies on us to actually get these perceptions. So there's been a lot of the major masters in my classes that had lately had this obsession with television. And part of it was that we had to get that we were created as a reflection on the television screen and, you know, as a very two-dimensional life, only as a reflection of the infinite being. And that this had to change, that we had to come out of the television and get a real life. They should turn the television off and get a real life.
Right.
So, I mean, these insights had to be gotten in the physical. When we did get it, this changed all life within the cosmos from a reflection to an expression, a much higher, more three-dimensional order of existence. So that, you know, this obsessive TV watching was actually meant to give us clues that we were more than just a television show. That we are, in fact, the magnificent expression of the divine. So that's the first part, and that's a little clearer now, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, the second part of this third aspect of answering that question you had asked is that this is actually exactly the time to overcome our addictions as light workers. And we mentioned earlier how addictions promise enhanced clarity, but they don't deliver it, and they can fool us. So we should watch for subtle addictions, things like, we mentioned the addiction to know that could lead us to jumping to conclusions, but others could be the addiction to save, the addiction that things always have to be made nice or perfect or pleasant, the addiction to be in a partnership to be happy, or the addiction to spend or eat. So your watching TV could also have been mirroring to you that there are other addictions in your life that the universe is now supporting you to break in terms of habits. So that should answer it better.
Yes, that's actually definitely a very layered, definitely lots of layers to consider in everything, but particularly in that example. So I wanted to move on to another question. It is that I've been wondering, since diversity of perception is so important at the level of material life, I've heard you mention that a few times, I'm curious what it means to be engaged in encouraging everyone to expand their perception as much as possible.
Well, we should explain what diversity of perception, those terms, what that actually means. It's indeed something that the Infinite Mother of all life has relied upon to maximize opportunities for learning. See, we've just said how it's in the material life, it's in the flesh, where all new knowledge is gained. Because that's where the known and the unknown meet. So, you know, she relies upon our unique ways of perception in order to maximize learning about her own being from watching her expressions. So the part that's commonly misunderstood, however, is that we fulfill the function of giving diverse perspectives to the infinite only when we are living to our fullest capacity for perception. In other words, think of diversity as resulting from the following scenario. Mother's light shines through the lenses of her individuated creations. Some are smaller lenses than others and can reflect but smaller pictures. Nevertheless, what they reflect is unique in its contribution. There's no one that has a lens just like theirs. So even though they may be exploring a smaller portion of creation through their individual expression, it is as important as a larger piece. If one strand is removed out of the spider's web, it becomes incomplete and unstable. You know, you might have the little tiny little flower fairy in the garden. You might have the vast archangel Michael. They have different levels of expressing. Nevertheless, the one is as important as the other, even though the one fulfills a greater task. Because without the one strand missing in that spider web, the perfection is gone. So everyone who has deserved the right to live at these high levels into which the cosmos has been ascending as well as the earth since February of 2005, have the right to the fullest clarity of his or her lens through which Mother can shine her light.
Wow. Great. Wonderful news. I'm wondering, still related to that last answer, how we can discern when someone's lower consciousness is part of the divine plan rather than being part of the divine plan to, say, help that person raise his or her level of perception.
What are you really saying? Are you asking me when is it to the benefit of the whole if somebody acts not from their highest vision?
Well, you could phrase it like that, but it's more about encouraging those to raise their perception and the degree to which that is the responsibility of light workers.
Oh, and so when should you let them be and when should you assist then, or what?
Well, that's a large portion of the question,
okay.
Yes.
Well, let's start in with that, and any other questions you're welcome to phrase, to formulate as I go along. So, alright, well, we'll start in August of 2006, when all the unknown portions of the infinite being, which is what one calls illusion, were solved. The very purpose of life, namely to turn the unknown, which is illusion, into the known, which is light, through experience, changed. At that point, the purpose became to reflect the divine attributes of the infinite mother of all life as fully as possible through our own. So, my beloved light family, up until that point, many light workers lovingly and knowingly contracted with the infinite to mirror, to live out certain blind spots in order to lower consciousness so that we could mirror to others involved in the contract certain portions of the illusion. In other words, some of us deliberately volunteered to become perception givers so that the perception getters could solve certain portions of the mystery. In that instance, it was our duty to get the lessons they were mirroring as rapidly as possible, and in that way, help them off their treadmill. But now it's different. It is the birthright of every being who has earned the right to be at these higher levels, into which the cosmos and the earth have been ascending since February of 2005, to live at their highest possible level of perception. Now, I just want to interject here and point out that I keep saying all those that have earned the right to live. Because many of the very hostile races that have tried very hard to keep the Earth's consciousness down because they could foresee that it would become a very pivotal point in the cosmic ascension. As we moved up and up and up, they ceased to exist. And we lost many beings on Earth, too, that had very controlling plans for humanity. They simply ceased to exist. So that's why I keep using the phrase, everyone who has earned the right to be at these higher levels. So, deliberately taking illusion as part of our service is no longer required. So we've all been helped off the treadmill. Now, we're not all functioning at the same level, and we should respect that. And if we don't have any addiction or desire to save, we will hear when it is that has to be done, you know, and when it is that we don't need to reach out because they like where they are. You know, can I deviate from our topic a little bit? I wanted to tell the folks the extraordinary story of how there were portions of Mother's own being, which Mother is the infinite being, her first creation is the Father. She is all things, but there is more feminine in existence than masculine. So Mother, to birth, is feminine. And she is the infinite being. I would like to explain to them the fascinating story of how there were, in fact, six major parts of her own being that she could not determine were they actually her own being or were they not. So let's take a short commercial break, and when we come back, I will go into that just very briefly, and then we'll continue with your questions.
Albion continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the interrelationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almeen. To learn more about Almeen and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back, and we are about to explain to you how it is that there were certain portions of the infinite's being that she did not understand whether they were hers or whether they not were not. The first being she created to mirror back to her, to reflect back to her portions of her own beingness, was the Father. She gave him the capacity to deal with her emotions, to make sense of her emotions, mirror them back to her. But what she did not foresee is when she created and finalized this, her first creation, that the emotion that it would evoke in her was far greater than she had anticipated. Her joy, her passion, her laughter, her incredible, beautiful experiences of this, her first creation, spilled over the boundaries of what he was supposed to hold as the parameter in which creation would take place. So he mirrored back to her confusion. When we are confronted with that which is not within ourselves, we end up with confusion. he mirrored back to her confusion, and he tried to control things, and hence an internal dialogue of mind arose. Things occurred because of this glitch, if you will, in her first creation, in that it did not have all its capacity to deal with what was handed to him. Now she didn't know whether what he was mirroring back to her was herself, or whether he was mirroring back to her what was that portion of his own freedom of choice. So when they created the screen on which they put their creations, which eventually walked out of the screen and into Mother's heart, and we all became real. The story of Geppetto loving the little wooden puppet so much that he became a real-life boy. But when that occurred, we undertook to play out certain portions that Mother didn't know whether they were hers or whether Father was just mirroring his own choices. So that's how these illusions or unknown portions of beingness arose. And please continue, Paul, with your questions. We're very grateful for your help.
Wow, it's my pleasure. That's incredible. It sounds like you just described for the listeners at least one layer of what caused the fall or the dissension of creation.
Yes, and there are multiple layers, and absolutely true. We should, at one of the shows, talk about the largest layer, which is the biggest picture of how the fall occurred.
All right.
And we should tackle that one with our listeners on one of these shows.
Okay, I'll schedule it in sometime.
Okay.
For now, I'd like to go back to something we were talking about before that, which was about awareness and levels of awareness. And I was wondering how responsible each individual is for his or her own level of awareness.
Okay, now level of awareness is one thing. Raising the level of awareness is another.
Well, I guess that's more my question.
Okay.
How responsible are individuals for raising their level of awareness?
Okay, let's go through this. So everybody is not created at the same level of awareness. There are slots. There are portions for every thread on that spider web. However, because Mother released everyone from the treadmill of playing roles to mirror little spots of illusion so that others could get it and Mother could learn whether it was indeed her own stuff, if you will, or not, because everyone has been helped off the treadmill, that's the first reason why they are fully responsible for their levels of awareness. In other words, the growth level of their awareness. But there's a second reason why. Mother kept remaking the spirits of all beings. In fact, in Revelations, it speaks about this new city that will come upon the earth that is Mother and Father's city, the New Jerusalem, which we've been very actively working on to bring into physicality with our classes of masters and students. So it speaks there of all things shall be made anew. There shall be new heavens and a new earth. Multiple times since Mother called me to the role of being a major key turner to unlock membranes and so on as the ascension happens here on Earth, because it has to be done in the physical. Since she has done that, I have seen her many times remake all beings. And somehow it didn't work. They kept going back for the most part to their old habits. So recently she discovered that part of the problem was the cellular memory, because she would erase the patterns out of the physical. But the cells held memory. They were like living creatures, every little cell in your body. So they had their own memory. And so what Mother recently did is totally remake the body. That still was not enough. So that was the second reason of why we are fully responsible now for what level of awareness we choose to live at. She did a third thing. When she collapsed time, and last week we discussed exactly the massive event that happened when space collapsed, first week of December 2007. But time is the movement of awareness through space. Awareness stopped moving in August of 2006. At that time, there was no longer linear time. But still, we encountered new aspects that created linear time later again in the game. Mother collapsed those also. So when time collapsed, there was only one moment, and like the movie Groundhog's Day, where he lives the same day over and over, we're actually living the same moment over and over and over. The moment that Mother chose is the moment in which we all were created. So that every moment as she grows from our collective experiences and her own, every moment her highest wisdom is put into recreating us. We are made new moment by moment by moment. There is not the slightest reason we have to live out the old ways of bondage to form, bondage to social conditioning, bondage to self-images and labels, and so forth. We are totally free from it. We are fully responsible for what level of our awareness as high as possible that we live.
Wow. That's a great answer to that question, Almeen. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Well, my next question has to do with how light workers guide themselves through their lives. I know personally I use feeling as a guide to discern whether or not I am living impeccably. I know you've mentioned in your book, Journey to the Heart of God, that feeling is only a reliable tool of discernment once all personal identification is gone. So I wanted to ask you if you could share with the listeners how one might know when all personal identification is gone, and how one can discern their highest course of action until it is so.
Well, Paul, as you know, people that usually end up making it to our classes are people that have gone to other teachers, and they've gone round and round on a very nice journey that has gone around and around a fishbowl. And the reason is that the teachers themselves still have an internal dialogue and identify with the egoic mind, the emotions, and the physical. So when they come to our classes, they lose the dialogue. And they do it through grace, amongst other things, because they are among immortal masters. But identifications or labels are gone only when the mind is silenced. Now, I will just confess something to you. To my great surprise, I recently recognized, having lived years, knowing that I am a being as vast as the cosmos, having a human experience, that too was a form of personal identification. My being exists beyond the boundaries of the cosmos. Every being is a consciousness superimposed over all that is. A vacuum exists around the cosmos, but that is only an illusion. There's really no such thing as a vacuum. Those are the oceans of consciousness that we discussed last week on our show when we spoke about the macrocosm. But in every smallest portion of space, there's only the one infinite being expressing as the many. And so each of us is a unique perspective within that being. So understanding that we are everywhere, far beyond the cosmos, is our second form of losing personal identification. And, you know, last week, which was the first week in December, in 2007, because we're pre-recording the show, last week in December, I actually, you were present when I had to undergo my third loss of identity.
What?
Because, you know, it was terrifying experience. It took me a full day to control my fear, and then it became incredibly blissful and expansive. But first you don't identify with your mind and your body and your ego anymore. The second then is you don't identify just with the cosmos, but then you go through the oceans of consciousness, which is unformed mind that is nevertheless active. But there is a point where those oceans of consciousness surrounding our cosmos comes to an end. And beyond it is mind at rest. Total rest and silence. Not a single thought. And that is where I had to go into last week for my third loss of ego identification. You know, will it ever end? I don't know. Understanding that we are everywhere, far beyond the cosmos, our second form of losing personal identification, and then the third, I suspect that this never ends, and that there is no point of arrival in shedding personal identification. However far we can see, there is always a distant horizon beyond that. Therefore, purifying ourselves of identity so that our feelings can register purely and clearly is an ongoing work in progress. So since August of 2006, opposite energies are repelling. Things that worked before and associations that seemed acceptable may now cause body truth, such as nausea, to tell us otherwise. The body will respond negatively by tightening muscles, etc., to opposite physicality and energy in its presence. That which was hidden before will have a very difficult time escaping these detection tools. So the core advice would be to slow your life down enough to be able to pay attention to the feelings of your heart, as well as the reactions of your body, which are telling you what no longer serves your highest path. As for weeding out feelings that are tainted with unresolved issues, ruthlessness of self and your own motives is the only answer. To thine own self be true, and it must needs follow as night the day, thou canst not be false to another. That is from Shakespeare. Join us after this commercial break.
A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Al Mean. To learn more about Al Mean and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We are welcoming you back for our fourth and final segment of discussing how best we can serve as light workers. We want to ask you also to join us again next week, when we will be speaking about accepting the responsibilities of mastery. All want to achieve mastery, yet few are willing to carry the mantle of self-responsibility required for masterful living. Living from the awareness of our true identity as a being as vast as the cosmos, having a human experience, we see ourselves as the first cause in our lives, rather than the effect of outside circumstances. I think it will be an interesting show, folks, so we hope you will join us then. But now, back to Paul St. John, who is our office manager and a master in his own right, who has compiled for us questions to help us best serve as those light beacons of humanity that we are. Paul, what would be your next question?
Well, first, Almien, I'd just like to thank you for what you were discussing before the break. You mentioned going through this third phase of shedding identity consciousness, entering into that space of being okay and ultimately in bliss with mind at rest. And I, of course, want to thank you for always being that spearhead who goes through these things first, making it so much easier for all who follow you.
Thank you very much.
And you're welcome. I've been wanting to say that since last week when it happened, actually. So my next question is down to a very practical level. It has to do with prioritizing and with time management, with so much for lightworkers to accomplish within each day, and with time still seeming to speed up to some degree. I was wondering if you could explain to the listeners how one can best prioritize and be efficient.
Okay. Well, I want to just mention to the folks at home that are tuning into us from wherever they are that we discussed something unique last week. It is the most massive event in terms of creating a higher level of existence for all of us that has ever taken place. And it happened during the first week of December 2007, where we entered from Mother's external space, if you want to the internal space. And that the structure of the cosmos and its relationship with the oceans of consciousness, if you will, that lies around it, changed. And the oceans of consciousness started to move. The cosmic structure has also changed. And just this morning, it changed yet again. Now, this is beyond the scope of the topics that we're covering within today's show, but we want to explain to you that the cosmic structure is more one of flow, less structure, and more fluid structure, if you will, or flexible structure. So our own life will become similar. The linear prioritizing that we did before to efficiently utilize our time, as Paul is discussing, it's changed. Things we used to see as insignificant may now become key issues of the moment. Thus, as we write our tasks down and underline which ones need to be done that day, we have to stay very alert and aware, because a seemingly insignificant event may contain your next step. So the rule of thumb for all life right now is flexible structure. Now, Paul, would you explain to them how we are dividing our days so that a part of the day responds to outside stimulus, but that the other day becomes the first cause? In other words, we have part of the day as an effect that we're living and part as a cause that we're living. Can you explain to them that? Because I think that still is very pertinent and relevant. It is most successful businesses are run as most successful lives are, not as an effect. The phone rings, we jump. Fax comes in, we respond to it, but as an actual first cause, so that it builds half the day and maintains half the day. So just give us an example of how you do that.
Well, you've pretty much summed it up, Almien. It's an example would just be scheduling an hour or so in the morning to return phone calls and to respond to emails. And then, like you said, during the afternoon, or, for example, not responding to those things quite so readily, and dedicating the time strictly for endeavors which are more expanding of the business instead of just responding. So in that portion of the day, I'm more in charge of direction things are going, as opposed to reacting or responding to external forces. And it is very helpful, and it's quite interesting that you use the term flexible structure, because that really sums it up to me. Because there's that underlying structure there, but of course, always being flexible to that inner sense of knowing when to pick up the phone or when the perfect moment to do that one certain job that's been sitting there for a while is definitely a key as well.
And you know, something else we might want to add to this, that is a principle that hopefully we are also practicing in the office. He's put on the spot. But we take the goal that we wish to accomplish. A goal might be to obtain an internet radio show. So that is the goal. There are certain tasks that have to be done to fulfill that goal. So we might brainstorm, because brainstorming is a very fluid way of thinking. It actually creates little small movements in that assemblage point that we have discussed often on our shows, and you can define as a ball of light sitting on the edge of the bodies that you're in, which is sort of like a luminous egg that your physical body walks around in. It sits on the edge of that. Its position determines your reality. In mystical work, if you want to disappear out of this reality, you would shift that ascendage point far enough and maintain its shift that you would be out of here. And for 1 minute, you'll be seen, and the next minute, you won't. Now, when you brainstorm this fluid movements, it creates fluid perception, not in the box, but out of the box. So you brainstorm and you determine a list of tasks to fulfill the goal. The one task might be to contact the radio station. So the man is not there or the lady is not there that you need to speak with. They need to call you back. Okay, this is going to go to your maintenance section. If they haven't called you back by so many days, you need to call them again. So you divide it into the tasks, and in this way you put a foundation under your goals. Light workers frequently are the dreamers of the world. They are the ones that see the vision, but they do not have the practical skill sets to put those in place. And then, even with this, one has to be fully aligned with spirit, meaning that there's times for silences in which you just simply look through your day and see which things stand out on the horizon. Because it might be that you need to change your priorities.
Well, thank you, Amin. That's a really, I think, needed description of how things should be done, particularly, like you said, for light workers. I'm wondering if you can mention how it is that we get into that structured flow, that alignment that you're talking about.
Well, Paul, this is a very good question. We are there when we live in eternal time, which means living without opposition to life, as opposition to life pulls us out of eternal time and into linear time. If we are living with full awareness of the moment, we are living in eternal time. And it is there where all things reveal themselves. But our time has unfortunately come to an end. I'm very grateful for your assistance. Thank you so much for compiling such very, very useful and practical questions for us. It's been a wonderful show. And to our listeners, much love and gratitude. It is your continued support that makes this show possible, and it is with great love that we leave you at this time and hope to join you again next week. Thank you so much.
We hope you have enjoyed today's show, Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean.